miserably failed. I will talk to you tomorrow.
No worries.
You are listening to WSCR HD Chicago, WBMX HD 2 Chicago, Sports Radio 670 The Score, a radio.com station. We've got some work to do. This hour is being brought to you by Vasectomy Clinics of Chicago. Herbie, let's go!
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Previously on The Lawrence Holmes Show.
Dan Hayes, who used to cover the White Sox, now covers the Twins. He covers baseball overall, and he does it very well for The Athletic. You are covering the White Sox as they are figuring out to burn it to the ground and start to rebuild it. What's it like for you to see what they're doing now?
When you bring in the number of talented guys that they did, whether it was the Quintana trade, bringing in Eloy and Cease, or you look at the Sale trade, and you knew that this was going to happen to them at one point, or you at least suspected it. And so to see it being realized so quick is pretty awesome, just because I remember, I think we were in Seattle, the White Sox were playing the Mariners, when Luis Robert signed, and knowing that, hey, they just spent, you know, obviously the signing bonus was 26 to him, but they spent $52 million to bring in that player, and to see him get through some of the growing pains of development and show up on the big stage this way has been really exciting to see, because it was a talent that you knew that they felt was critical to spend $52 million for, you know, a teenager at the time, and to see it realized is pretty cool.
Make me a bicycle clown!
Welcome in. My name is Lawrence Holmes, and I'm here with you until 2 o'clock. Ordinarily on a Tuesday, we would start the show with Cubs manager David Ross, but Rossi had some stuff that he wanted to get done, so he's going to check in with us at 12:30. Programming note, Cubs manager David Ross will join us at 12:30 today. He's not the only person who's going to be on the show. Our buddy Mick Gillespie is going to jump on at 1 o'clock. We're going to talk some Cubs and White Sox baseball with him and Tony Gwynn Jr. We're going to talk with him about both of these baseball teams. I got some other stuff that I want to throw at you. I want to make sure there's some football stuff that we get to. But since Rossi's going to join us at 12:30, that gives us the opportunity to start the show talking about the first place Chicago White Sox. We'll put the first place Chicago Cubs on the back burner for a little bit. I'm so happy that you're here. Last night was one of those games where you're watching the White Sox and you're going, yeah, this is going to be one of those games where everything falls apart. They were playing defense last night like they were drunk in the early part of the game. You're seeing Adam Engel, he who helped save the no-hitter, just like, whoops, ball going right through the wickets. You see a Nick Madrigal throw it to left field. There's all sorts of weird stuff that was going on in the game yesterday, along with Lucas Giolito not having his best stuff nor his best command. But what's been cool about watching this White Sox team so far this year is their ability to overcome some of this stuff. We're so trained as White Sox fans to fear the worst in almost every situation. And maybe I'm starting to get over it. Maybe you're starting to get over it. But in every situation like that, you're like, oh, I know this movie. I totally know this movie. This is the movie, the part of the movie, where the White Sox end up losing the game. And then Nelson Cruz hits a three-run homer that ends up making it 8-0. Then we just get ready for tomorrow's game. The fight that they showed yesterday was really, really impressive. It was nice to see Giolito settle in. It was nice to see the offense fight back and push back and not give up on the game and a lead against a team that they've had struggles with in the Minnesota Twins. They didn't do that. They chipped away until they could get some moments where the big guys could come up and come through. And Luis Robert, I know that we were talking about him during our preempted transition that we had with Dan Bernstein, but I am someone who ordinarily plays it safe when it comes to talking about players. We've seen it before. We've seen guys that come up and have incredible numbers. I mean, for White Sox fans, you don't have to look any farther than Gordon Beckham, who's still playing, right? Is it, Herbie, is Gordon Beckham still in the league? I feel like he's a Met or a Philly or something.
I think he got cut by the Mets before the season, but I'll check if he got picked up by anybody else.
I mean, you know, professional player, you might as well at this point. But Gordon Beckham came up and really lit the world on fire with getting on base, and then he struggled, and he struggled for the rest of his career. The profiles of those two players, Gordon Beckham and what we're seeing from Luis Robert, is a little different. He's, I mean, everything that people said about him. I remember, you know, talking even with Rick Hahn about this, where I was saying, you know, Rick, I'm a little worried about putting so much pressure on a rookie outfielder considering who's playing left and who's playing right. And we haven't seen any problems with him out there. We see the incredible range that he has. And it's been so much fun. And now let's talk about the power for a minute. Let's talk about players with easy power. Now, you see it a lot in baseball where there are guys that they're getting everything out of the... Javi's one of these guys. And I think that Javi has easy power, by the way. But Javi is a guy that never gets cheated on a swing. And when you see him, you feel like he's going to corkscrew himself into the ground because he swings so hard. I've always worried that Javi end up with ankle problems with his right ankle in particular because of how hard he swings. The thing about Robert is, yes, he swings hard, but it doesn't look like it. He is tied right now with Fernando Tatis Jr. and there's a couple other guys that have the most 110 mile per hour exit velocity home runs in the game. He's got five of them. This home run that he hit last night, I know that he barreled it up perfectly, but it looked so good, it didn't even look like he was trying.
There was a hanging breaking ball, and now it adorns Luis Robert's home run tree. Bring him home and bring the tie, 5-all.
Yeah, highlight courtesy of NBC Sports Chicago. That was easy. That's easy 450 feet straightaway center field for that guy. Easy power. I've been saying this about this White Sox team for a couple of weeks. They are an incredibly talented bad ball hitting team. If you make mistakes, they will punish you for it. And they will punish you 450 feet deep. This White Sox team, I'd have to go look back at every single one, but it's hard to recall cheap home runs with them. They haven't had a lot of wall scrapers. They've had those loud sounds that when you hear them, you're like, oh, bleep, that ball was destroyed. So seeing him continue to improve upon that, like, there are places that he can still get better. He is still a young player. He is going to strike out. I understand that. But he is an intimidating presence at the plate. Already, he is an intimidating presence. The slash line on this kid is unbelievable. And I know that we're only talking about, you know, 40 games or whatever. 298. 348, 612. He's a 960 OPS and a 157 OPS plus. If you start looking at what he's done over the last, and the White Sox lineup as a whole, like, there have been a lot of players that have been hot, and Jose Abreu is right at the top of that list. But you start looking at what his numbers have been over the last few games, it is it is very tantalizing. And one of the things that I'm trying to do, considering where we're all at right now, like we're in a pandemic, there's social unrest throughout the country. I am trying to enjoy all the things that I can enjoy. And what I can enjoy right now is watching Luis Robert just do work. It's been more fun than I thought it was going to be, because I was afraid to jump in on like the comps, because you hear them, and you hear them in hushed tones with people around baseball, but not with him. You heard people have faith that he was going to be something special, and they weren't afraid to tell you of how special they thought he could be. This dude, in the last seven games, 370 average, three home runs, seven RBIs, on base of 400, and he's slugging 778. Let's go back to the double from last night's too, where it's a pitch where it looks like he's kind of fooled, but is able to get the bat head out there and do work.
2-1, one out for Robert. Line drive, left field toward the corner. That is a fair ball. Up and over the wall. The Sox will take one run. Sanchez scores. Welcome back, Yolmer. 6-5. Sox still going.
Sox still going, and Sox going on to win. Highlight courtesy of NBC Sports Chicago, Jason Benetti and Steve Stone on the call. That's the other thing. Here's a big moment in the game. Here's a moment where you're wondering if a young player is going to pucker like a lemon. He doesn't. There doesn't seem to be a lot of fear in him in that regard. And it's cool. Texters are jumping in on the text zone saying, yeah, I had that feeling. I was getting ready to turn the game off. 312 texter says, Lawrence, that is exactly what I was saying to myself and my friends in the second inning. I said, I've seen this movie before. 773 texter said, I turned the game off after the Madrigal era, but I came back an inning later. Previous years, I would have left the game and gone on with my life. I like it. They're rewiring us as fans. And that's a big win, and now the White Sox sit in first place by themselves in the American League Central. 32 was the number that I was looking at, because I felt like 32 would get them into the playoffs. Now you can start thinking bigger than that. Expectations change because of the data that we now have in front of us. Now we can start thinking of them as, go win the division. Go do that. Go win the division. So that brings us to the trade deadline. The trade deadline was yesterday, and the White Sox didn't make any real significant moves at the trade deadline. I went back this morning and I listened to Rick Hahn talk about why they didn't. The whole press conference was like 25 minutes. I'm not going to play all of that, but I am going to play the portion that you probably care about. And then we can have a little bit of a discussion. By the way, if you're joining in and you're like, wait, where's David Ross? He's going to join me at 12:30. He had some stuff that he had to do, so we're going to talk with him at 12:30. This was Rick Hahn yesterday explaining why the White Sox kind of decided that they were good with the roster that they have.
You know, we had a lot of conversations, obviously. There were some conversations in which perhaps we were a little more aggressive than others. But at the end, it came down to not wanting to do anything that was going to compromise what we're excited about for the better part of the next decade around here. We feel very good about what this team's accomplished over the early part of this season or the first part of this season. We feel confident in what this team is capable of doing over the next several months. But just as importantly, we're excited about where this team is headed for the next several years. And in the end, we didn't want to do anything that was going to, you know, compromise what this bright future looks like to all of us around the club.
Rick, would you say this would be the first year since this process started that maybe seriously gave weight and explored options for, you know, upgrading at the deadline and kind of pushing towards a, you know, making the most out of this contention run?
Yeah, but again, it was with the eye more towards the long term as well. Anything that got that was very seriously considered, I guess I should say, was viewed as a multi-year fit. We weren't really that aggressive or that focused on things that were just simply going to be rentals. We did explore a couple of those in the end because obviously it's our obligation, but the pricing obviously didn't work out beyond the Dyson deal the other day.
Well, yeah, one of the rumors that was out there involved Michael Kopech, and it was kind of surprising because we all know how you value Kopech. Was there any validity to that, and can you talk about – there's no chance of him opting back in, is there?
That hasn't been discussed, no. Yeah, I don't want to really talk about any rumors because, again, they historically we've tried to make clear the amount of weight that people should give to unsourced information that's out there in any form of media. I will say we, as I told you, when we discussed Michael originally opting out, we still view him as a premium piece on a very good team for a long time. So in order to be motivated to move someone like that, we'd have to feel we were having something similar walk in the door. So we still think very highly of Michael.
Hey, Rick, just what was it like trying to navigate through a trading deadline during COVID-19?
You know what? I think last time we spoke, or maybe it was the time before, someone asked me about what I expected for the deadline. And I think I explained that I thought it was actually probably going to be relatively quiet as compared to past years. And quite frankly, I have to say over the last 5 days, it's been very similar to most every other year in terms of the amount of dialogue between clubs and the various level of intrigue or strategy involved in terms of setting the team up. So that it was much similar, much more normal than I anticipated it being in terms of the volume of dialogue. I think there was a fair amount of trades. I don't know how it compares to last year. Obviously, with the expanded playoff system, there were probably fewer sellers than in your normal season or in previous seasons. But again, there was still a good amount of dialogue, which about 2 weeks ago or so, I did not foresee.
How do you guys feel about your starting pitching depth right now and your rotation in general past Lucas and Dallas up top?
And obviously they've done a great job. Dane Dunning has certainly staked his claim to a spot in that rotation based on his two opportunities so far this year. You know, Lopi is still climbing his way back, and Carlos Rodon had a nice outing yesterday in Schaumburg and then is a potential option for us here in the not-too-distant future as well. You know, Cease, this has been a good year thus far for Cease in terms of climbing, in terms of his development, in terms of some of the mechanical things that they've been working on with him. He's shown progress, but there's still the opportunity. That's one thing over the next, you know, 2 months here. We're going to have this young group go through a pennant race. We're going to have this young group, ideally, knock on wood, be competing deep into October. Those are invaluable experiences for young guys, whether it's Cease or Kopech or a guy like Dane Dunning, to experience that and have that something to fall back on for the next several years as we hope to continually to be in that spot. I don't think any of the 30 teams are going to tell you even the day that they feel comfortable with their pitching depth. Just give the nature of how pitching works and the injuries throughout the game. But as we sit here today, we like the options that we can trot out there.
Do you see Carlos returning from the injured list and Dane coming up here now as kind of those mid-season pitching additions that you might have thought of, specifically Carlos coming back from injury in a normal season, as you talked about earlier?
Yeah, we did. We originally did talk about Carlos coming, you know, late July initially and rejoining us during a normal season, and that would be like a trade acquisition back in Glendale when we first talked about his timing. So in some ways, Carlos can be viewed that way. You know, we had a lot of interesting conversations, not just externally, but also internally about how some of the guys out at Schaumburg can potentially help us over the next few weeks and months. You know, it's an interesting year. It's a unique opportunity to give young guys some opportunity, a unique chance, a unique environment to get guys exposure to a pennant race. And, you know, we've got some internal options that we may, in addition to the guys like Rodon, that we may well give an opportunity to here over the coming weeks and let them get their feet wet in the midst of a pennant race.
Hey, Rick, I wanted to follow up on